This is Audible.
Listening Library presents Salt to the Sea by Ruta Sepetys. Read for you by Michael Crouch, Will Damron, Georgina Marie, and Cassandra Morris.
We the survivors are not the true witnesses. The true witnesses, those in possession of the unspeakable truth, are the drowned, the dead, the disappeared. Primo Levi.
Joanna. Guilt is a hunter. My conscience mocked me, picking fights like a petulant child. "It's all your fault," the voice whispered. I quickened my pace and caught up with our small group. The Germans would march us off the field road if they found us. Roads were reserved for the military. Evacuation orders hadn't been issued, and anyone fleeing East Prussia was branded a deserter. But what did that matter? I became a deserter 4 years ago, when I fled from Lithuania. Lithuania. I had left in 1941. What was happening at home? Were the dreadful things whispered in the streets true? We approached a mound on the side of the road. The small boy in front of me whimpered and pointed. He had joined us 2 days prior, just wandered out of the forest alone, and quietly began following us. "Hello, little one. How old are you?" I had asked.
6,
he replied. "Who are you traveling with?" He paused and dropped his head.
"My Omi."
I turned toward the woods to see if his grandmother had emerged. "Where is your Omi now?" I asked. The wandering boy looked up at me, his pale eyes wide.
"She didn't wake up."
So the little boy traveled with us, often drifting just slightly ahead or behind. And now he stood, pointing to a flap of dark wool beneath a meringue of snow. I waved the group onward, and when everyone advanced, I ran to the snow-covered heap. The wind lifted a layer of icy flakes, revealing the dead blue face of a woman, probably in her 20s. Her mouth and eyes were hinged open, fixed in fear. I dug through her iced pockets, but they had already been picked. In the lining of her jacket, I found her identification papers. I stuffed them in my coat to pass on to the Red Cross and dragged her body off the road and into the field. She was dead, frozen solid, but the thought of tanks rolling over her was more than I could bear. I ran back to the road and our group. The wandering boy stood in the center of the path, snow falling all around him.
"She didn't wake up either?"
he asked quietly. I shook my head and took his mittened hand in mine. And then we both heard it in the distance. Bang!
Florian. Fate is a hunter. Engines buzzed in a swarm above. Der Schwarze Tod, the Black Death, they called them. I hid beneath the trees. The planes weren't visible, but I felt them. Close. Trapped by darkness, both ahead and behind, I weighed my options. An explosion detonated, and death crept closer, curling around me in fingers of smoke. I ran. My legs churned, sluggish, disconnected from my racing mind. I willed them to move, but my conscience noosed around my ankles and pulled down hard. "You are a talented young man, Florian." That's what Mother had said. "You are Prussian. Make your own decision, son," said my father. Would he have approved of my decisions, of the secrets I now carried across my back? Amidst this war between Hitler and Stalin, would Mother still consider me talented? or criminal. The Soviets would kill me. But how would they torture me first? The Nazis would kill me, but only if they uncovered the plan. How long would it remain a secret? The questions propelled me forward, whipping through the cold forest, dodging branches. I clutched my side with one hand, my pistol with the other. The pain surged with each breath and step, releasing warm blood out of the angry wound. The sound of the engines faded. I had been on the run for days, and my mind felt as weak as my legs. The hunter preyed on the fatigued and weary. I had to rest. The pain slowed me to a jog, and finally a walk. Through the dense trees in the forest, I spied branches hiding an old potato cellar. I jumped in. Bang!
Amelia. Shame is a hunter. I would rest a moment. I had a moment, didn't I? I slid across the cold, hard earth toward the back of the cave. The ground quivered. Soldiers were close. I had to move, but felt so tired. It was a good idea to put branches over the mouth of the forest cellar, wasn't it? No one would trek this far off the road, would they? I pulled the pink woolen cap down over my ears and tugged my coat closed near my throat. Despite my bundled layers, January's teeth bit sharp. My fingers had lost all feeling. Pieces of my hair, frozen crisp to my collar, tore as I turned my head. So I thought of August. My eyes dropped closed. And then they opened. A Russian soldier was there. He leaned over me with a light, poking my shoulder with his pistol. I jumped, frantically pushing myself back. "Fraulein," he grinned, pleased that I was alive. "Come, Fraulein. How old are you?"
15, I whispered. "Please, I'm not German. Nicht Deutsche." He didn't listen, didn't understand, or didn't care. He pointed his gun at me and yanked at my ankle.
"Shh, Fraulein."
He lodged the gun under the bone of my chin. I pleaded. I put my hands across my stomach and begged. He moved forward. No, this would not happen. I turned my head. "Shoot me, soldier, please." Bang.
Alfred. Fear is a hunter. But brave warriors, we brush away fear with a flick of the wrist. We laugh in the face of fear, kick it like a stone across the street. Yes, Hannelore, I compose these letters in my mind first, as I cannot abandon my men as often as I think of you. You would be proud of your watchful companion, Sailor Alfred Frick. Today I saved a young woman from falling into the sea. It was nothing, really, but she was so grateful she clung to me, not wanting to let go. "Thank you, Sailor." Her warm whisper lingered in my ear. She was quite pretty and smelled like fresh eggs, but there have been many grateful and pretty girls. "Oh, do not be concerned. You and your red sweater are foremost in my thoughts. How fondly, how incessantly I think of my Hannelore and red sweater days. I'm relieved you are not here to see this. Your sugared heart could not bear the treacherous circumstances here in the port of Gotenhafen. At this very moment, I am guarding dangerous explosives. I am serving Germany well. Only 17, yet carrying more valor than those twice my years. There is talk of an honor ceremony, but I'm too busy fighting for the Führer to accept honors. Honors are for the dead, I've told them. We must fight while we are alive. Yes, Hannelore, I shall prove to all of Germany. There is indeed a hero inside of me."
Bang!
I abandoned my mental letter and crouched in the supply closet, hoping no one would find me. I did not want to go outside.
Florian. I stood in the forest cellar, my gun fixed on the dead Russian. The back of his head had departed from his skull. I rolled him off the woman. She wasn't a woman. She was a girl in a pink woolen cap. And she had fainted. I scavenged through the Russian's frozen pockets and took cigarettes, a flask, a large sausage wrapped in paper, his gun, and ammunition. He wore two watches on each wrist, trophies collected from his victims. I didn't touch them. Crouching near the corner of the cellar, I scanned the cold chamber for signs of food, but saw none. I put the ammunition in my pack, careful not to disturb the small box wrapped in a cloth. The box. How could something so small hold such power? Wars had been waged over less. Was I really willing to die for it? I gnawed at the dried sausage, savoring the saliva it produced. The ground vibrated slightly. This Russian wasn't alone. There would be more. I had to move. I turned the top on the soldier's flask and raised it to my nose. Vodka. I opened my coat, then my shirt, and poured the alcohol down my side. The intensity of the pain produced a flash in front of my eyes. My ruptured flesh fought back, twisting and pulsing. I took a breath, bit back a yell, and tortured the gash with the remainder of the alcohol. The girl stirred in the dirt. Her head snapped away from the dead Russian. Her eyes scanned the gun at my feet and the flask in my hand. She sat up, blinking. Her pink hat slid from her head and fell silently into the dirt. The side of her coat was streaked with blood. She reached into her pocket. I threw down the flask and grabbed the gun. She opened her mouth and spoke. Polish.
Amelia. The Russian soldier stared at me, mouth open, eyes empty. Dead. What had happened? Crouching in the corner was a young man, dressed in civilian clothes. His coat and shirt were unfastened, his skin bloodied and bruised to a deep purple. He held a gun. Was he going to shoot me? No. He had killed the Russian. He had saved me. Are you okay? I asked, barely recognizing my own voice. His face twisted at the sound of my words. He was German. I was Polish. He would want nothing to do with me. Adolf Hitler had declared that Polish people were subhuman. We were to be destroyed so the Germans could have the land they needed for their empire. Hitler said Germans were superior and would not live among Poles. We were not Germanizable. But our soil was. I pulled a potato from my pocket and held it out to him. Thank you. The dirt pulsed slightly. How much time had passed? We have to go, I told him. I tried to use my best German. In my head, the sentences were intact, but I wasn't sure they came out that way. Sometimes when I spoke German, people laughed at me, and then I knew my words were wrong. I lowered my arm and saw my sleeve, splattered with Russian blood. Would this ever end? Tears stirred inside of me. I did not want to cry. The German stared at me, a combination of fatigue and frustration. But I understood. His eyes on the potato said, Amelia, I'm hungry. The dried blood on his shirt said, Amelia, I'm injured. But the way he clutched his pack told me the most. Amelia, don't touch this.
Joanna. We trudged farther down the narrow road. 15 refugees. The sun had finally surrendered, and the temperature followed. A blind girl ahead of me, Ingrid, held a rope tethered to a horse-drawn cart. I had my sight, but we shared a handicap. We both walked into a dark corridor of combat, with no view of what lay ahead. Perhaps her lost vision was a gift. The blind girl could hear and smell things that the rest of us couldn't. Did she hear the last gasp of the old man as he slipped under the wheels of a cart several kilometers back? Did she taste coins in her mouth when she walked over the fresh blood in the snow?
Heartbreaking. I killed her,
said a voice behind me. It was the old shoemaker. I stopped and allowed him to catch up.
The frozen woman back there,
he continued.
Her shoes killed her. I keep telling them, but they don't listen. Poorly made shoes will torture your feet, inhibit your progress. Then you will stop.
He squeezed my arm. His soft red face peered out from beneath his hat.
And then you will die,
he whispered. The old man spoke of nothing but shoes. He spoke of them with such love and emotion that a woman in our group had crowned him the shoe poet. The woman disappeared a day later, but the nickname survived.
The shoes always tell the story,
said the shoe poet. Not always, I countered.
Yes, always. Your boots, they are expensive, well made. That tells me that you come from a wealthy family. But the style is one made for an older woman. That tells me they probably belong to your mother. A mother sacrificed her boots for her daughter. That tells me you are loved, my dear. And your mother is not here. So that tells me that you are sad, my dear. The shoes tell the story.
I paused in the center of the frozen road and watched the stubby old cobbler shuffle ahead of me. The shoe poet was right. Mother had sacrificed for me. When we fled from Lithuania, she rushed me to Insterburg and, through a friend, arranged for me to work in the hospital. That was 4 years ago. Where was Mother now? I thought of the countless refugees trekking toward freedom. How many millions of people had lost their home and family during the war? I had agreed with Mother to look to the future. But secretly, I dreamed of returning to the past. Had anyone heard from my father or brother? The blind girl put her face to the sky and raised her arm in signal. And then I heard them. Planes.
Florian. We had barely crawled out of the potato cellar when the Polish girl began to cry. She knew I was going to leave her. I had no choice. She would slow me down. Hitler aimed to destroy all Poles. They were Slavic, branded inferior. My father said the Nazis had killed millions of Poles. Polish intellectuals were savagely executed in public. Hitler set up extermination camps in German-occupied Poland, filtering the blood of innocent Jews into the Polish soil. Hitler was a coward. That had been one thing Father and I agreed upon.
Proszę, bitte,
she begged, alternating between Polish and broken German. I couldn't stand to look at her, at the streaks of dead Russian splattered down her sleeve. I started to walk away, her sobs flapping behind me.
Wait, please,
she called out. The sound of her crying was painfully familiar. It had the exact tone of my younger sister, Annie, and the sobs I heard through the hallway the day Mother took her last breath. Ani, where was she? Was she too in some dark forest hole with a gun to her head? A pain ripped through my side, forcing me to stop. The girl's feet quickly approached. I resumed walking.
Thank you,
she chirped from behind. The sun disappeared, and the cold tightened its fist. My calculations told me that I needed to walk another 2 kilometers west before stopping for the night. There was a better chance of finding shelter along a field road, but also a better chance of running into troops. It was wiser to continue along the edge of the forest. The girl heard them before I did. She grabbed my arm. The buzzing of aircraft engines surged fast and close from behind. The Russians were targeting German ground troops nearby. Were they in front of us or beside us? The bombs began falling. With each explosion, every bone in my body vibrated and hammered, clanging violently against the bell tower that was my flesh. The sound of anti-aircraft fire rang through the sky, answering the initial blasts. The girl tried to pull me onward. I shoved her away. Run! She shook her head, pointed forward, and awkwardly tried to pull me through the snow. I wanted to run, forget about her, leave her in the forest. But then I saw the droplets of blood in the snow coming from beneath her bulky coat. And I could not.
Amelia. He wanted to leave me. His race was his own. Who was this German boy, old enough to be in the Wehrmacht, yet dressed in civilian clothes? For me, he was a conqueror, a sleeping knight, like in the stories Mama used to tell. Polish legend told of a king and his brave knights who lay asleep within mountain caverns. If Poland was in distress, the knights would awaken and come to the rescue. I told myself that the handsome young man was a sleeping knight. He moved forward, his pistol at the ready. He was leaving. Why did everyone leave me? The swarm of planes strafed overhead. The buzzing in my ears made me dizzy. A bomb fell, and then another. The earth trembled, threatening to open its jaws and eat us. I tried to catch up to him, ignoring the pain and indignity beneath my coat. I had neither the time nor courage to describe why I couldn't run. Instead, I told myself to walk as fast as I could through the snow. The knight ran ahead of me, darting in and out of the trees, clutching his side, wrenched with pain. Strength drained from my legs. I thought of the Russians approaching, the pistol on my neck in the earthen cellar, and I willed my feet to move. I waddled like a duck through the deep snow. Then, suddenly, the sweet sound of Mama's nursery rhyme began to sing in my head. All the little duckies with their heads in the water, heads in the water. All the little duckies with their heads in the water. Oh, such sweet little duckies. Where were all the duckies now?
Alfred. Frick, what are you doing? Restocking ammunition, sir. I pretended to fumble with something on the shelf. That's not your assignment, said the officer. You're needed at the port, not in a supply closet. The order will be issued. We have to be ready. We'll be assigning every available vessel. If we get stuck here, some murderer from Moscow will make you his girlfriend. Do you want that? Certainly not. I did not want a glimpse of the Soviet forces. Their path of destruction lay large and wide. Panicked villagers spilled stories in the street of Russian soldiers wearing necklaces made from the teeth of children. And now, Russia's army was headed right for us with their allies, America and England, blowing wind into Stalin's sail. I had to get on a ship. Remaining in Gotenhafen meant certain death. I said, do you want to become Mosco's girlfriend? Barked the officer. No, sir. Then take your things and get to the port. You'll receive further instruction once you get there. I paused, wondering if I should pilfer anything from the supply closet. What are you waiting for, Frick? Get out of here, you pathetic slug. Why, yes, Hanalora. The uniform, it suits me quite well. If time allowed, I would have a photograph made for your bedside table. But alas, leisure time proves scarce here for valiant men. On the topic of heroism, it seems I will soon be promoted. Oh, certainly, darling. You can tell everyone in the neighborhood.
Ioana. The wandering boy found a deserted barn a ways off the road. We decided to settle there for the night. We had been walking for days, and both strength and morale waned. The bombs had set nerves on edge. I moved from body to body, treating blisters, wounds, frostbite. But I had no treatment for what plagued people the most. Fear. Germany had invaded Russia in 1941. For the past 4 years, the two countries had committed unspeakable atrocities, not only against each other, but against innocent civilians in their path. Stories had been whispered by those we passed on the road. Hitler was exterminating millions of Jews and had an expanding list of undesirables who were being killed or imprisoned. Stalin was destroying the people of Poland, Ukraine, and the Baltics. The brutality was shocking. Disgraceful acts of inhumanity. No one wanted to fall into the hands of the enemy. But it was growing harder to distinguish who the enemy was. An old German man had pulled me aside a few days earlier.
Do you have any poison? People are asking for it, he said.
I will not administer poison, I replied.
I understand, but you're a pretty girl. If Russia's army overtakes us, you'll want some for yourself.
I wasn't sure how much was exaggeration and how much was true. But I had seen things. A girl, dead in a ditch, her skirt knotted high. An old woman sobbing that they had burned her cottage. Terror was out there, and it chased us. So we ran west, toward parts of Germany not yet occupied. And now we all sat in an abandoned barn, trying to create a fire for warmth. I removed my gloves and kneaded my chapped hands. For 4 years, I had worked with the surgeon at the hospital in Insterburg. As the war raged and the staff dwindled, I moved from stocking supplies to assisting him in surgery.
You have steady hands, Joanna, and a strong stomach. You'll do well in medicine,
he had told me. Medicine. That had been my dream. I was studious, dedicated, perhaps overly so. My last boyfriend said I preferred my studies to him. Before I could prove it wasn't true, he had found another girl. I tried to massage warmth into my stiff fingers. My hands didn't concern me. But the supplies did. There wasn't much left. I had hoped the dead woman on the side of the road might have something. Thread, tea, even a clean handkerchief. But nothing was clean. Everything was filthy. Especially my conscience. We all looked up when they entered the barn. A young man carrying a pistol, followed by a short blonde girl in braids and a pink hat. They were both haggard. The blonde girl's face was red with exertion. The young man's face was also flushed. He had a fever.
Florian. Others had beaten us there, A teetering collection of weathered horse carts was tucked beyond the brush, a sober portrait of the trek toward freedom. I would have preferred an abandoned site, but knew I couldn't continue. The Polish girl pulled at my sleeve. She stopped in the snow, staring at the possessions outside the barn, evaluating the contents and whom they might belong to. There was no evidence of military.
I think okay, she said.
We walked inside. A group of 15 or 20 people sat huddled around a small fire. Their faces turned as I slipped in and stood near the door. Mothers, children, and elderly, all exhausted and broken. The Polish girl went straight to a vacant corner and sat down, wrapping her arms tightly around her chest. A young woman walked over to me.
Are you injured? I have medical training.
Her German was fluent, but not native. I didn't answer. I didn't need to speak to anyone.
Do you have any food to share?
She asked. What I had was no one's business.
Does she have any food?
She asked, pointing to the Polish girl rocking in the corner.
Her eyes look a bit wild.
I spoke without looking at her. She was in the forest. A Russian cornered her. She followed me here. She has a couple potatoes. Now leave me alone, I said. The young woman winced at the mention of the Russian. She left my side and headed quickly toward the girl. I found a solitary spot away from the group and sat down. I lodged my pack against the barn wall and carefully reclined on it. It would be warmer if I sat near the fire with the others, but I couldn't risk it. No conversations. I ate a small piece of the sausage from the dead Russian and watched the young woman as she tried to speak with the girl from the forest. Others called out to her for help. She must have been a nurse. She looked a few years older than me. Pretty. Naturally pretty. The type that's still attractive, even more so when she's filthy. Everyone in the barn was filthy. The stench of exertion, failed bladders, and most of all, fear, stunk worse than any livestock. The nurse girl would have turned my head back in Königsberg. I closed my eyes. I didn't want to look at the pretty girl. I needed to be able to kill her, kill them all, if I had to. My body begged for sleep, but my mind warned me not to trust these people. I felt a nudge at my feet and opened my eyes.
You didn't mention she was Polish, said the nurse.
And the Russian? She asked. He's taken care of, I told her. I need to sleep. She knelt down beside me. I could barely hear her.
What you need is to show me that wound you're trying to hide.
Amelia, I thought of the carts outside the barn. They cowered with the belongings of refugees. Trunks, suitcases, and furniture. There was even a sewing machine, like Mama's. Why aren't you making any dresses? I remembered asking Mama from my sunny perch in our kitchen. Mama turned to me from her sewing machine. Can you keep a secret? I nodded eagerly and moved toward her. She put her hands on her wide belly and smiled. I think it's a boy. I just know it's a boy. She hugged me close, her warm lips against my forehead. And you know what? You're going to be the best big sister, Amelia. And now, I sat in a freezing barn, alone. So far from home. These people had time to pack. I wasn't able to pack. Had left my entire life chewed to pieces. Who was using Mama's sewing machine now? The knight hadn't wanted to come inside. What was his name? Who was he running from? I had examined the carts and belongings, evaluating the items and their potential owners to determine if it was safe to enter. But we had no choice. Sleeping outside meant certain death. I sat in a corner and stuffed straw into my coat for warmth. Once I stopped moving, the pain subsided. I buried my face in my hands. A hand touched my shoulder. "Are you all right?" I looked up to see a young woman above me. She spoke in German, but with an accent. Her brown hair was pulled behind her ears. Her face was kind. "Are you injured?" she asked. I tried to control it. I fought it. And then, a single tear rolled down my cheek. She moved in close. "Where does it hurt?" she whispered. "I have medical training." I pulled my coat tight around me and shook my head. "No, danke." The girl cocked her head slightly. My accent had given me away. "Deutsche?" she whispered. I said nothing. The others stared at me. If I gave them my food, perhaps they'd leave me alone? I pulled a potato from my coat pocket and handed it to her. A potato for silence.
Joanna. The arrival of the German and the young girl made me uneasy. Neither spoke openly. The girl's eyes darted with trauma, and her shoulders trembled. I walked over to Ava. Ava was in her 50s and giant, like a Viking. Her feet and hands were larger than any man's. Some in our group called her "Sorry, Ava," because she often said appalling things, but inserted the word "sorry" before or after, as if to soften the sting. "Ava, you speak a bit of Polish, don't you?" I whispered.
"Not that you know of," she replied.
"I'm not going to tell anyone. That poor girl is suffering. I think she's Polish. Will you try to speak to her? Convince her to let me help."
"Who's the German she came in with? And why isn't he in uniform? We don't have permission to evacuate. If Hitler's henchmen find us with a deserter, we'll all be shot in the head. Sorry," said Ava.
"We don't know that he's a deserter. I don't know who he is, but he's injured. He found the girl in the forest." I lowered my voice. "Cornered by a Russian." Ava's face blanched.
"How far from here?" she asked.
"I don't know. Please, try to talk to her. Get some information."
Ava's husband was too old to serve in the military, but had been recruited into the Volkssturm, the People's Army. Hitler was now desperate and had called up all remaining men and boys. But somehow, the young man on the other side of the room had not been part of the recruitment. Why? Ava's husband insisted that she trek to the West. He was certain Hitler was going to lose and that Russia would occupy East Prussia and destroy everything in the process. In school, we were told that East Prussia was one of the most beautiful regions, but it had proven treacherous for those of us fleeing. Bordered to the north by Lithuania and to the south by Poland, it was a land of deep lakes and dark forests. Ava's plan was the same as the rest of ours. Trek to unoccupied Germany and reunite with family after the war ended. For now, I tended to people in the barn as best I could. Many had fallen asleep as soon as they sat down.
"Their feet,"
the shoe poet gently reminded as I passed him.
"Make sure to treat their feet, or all is lost."
"And what about your feet?" I asked. Poet's short frame was concave, like he had caught a large ball and never put it down.
I could walk 1,000 miles, my dear. He grinned. Excellent shoes.
Ava pulled me aside.
You're right. Polish. Her name is Amelia. She's 15, from Lvov, but she has no papers.
Where's Lvov? I asked.
In southeastern Poland, the Galicia region.
That made sense. Some Galicians had blonde hair and blue eyes like the girl. Her Aryan look might protect her from the Nazis.
Her father is some sort of math professor and sent her to East Prussia where she might be safer. She ended up working on a farm.
Ava lowered her voice.
Near Nemersdorf.
No, I whispered.
Ava nodded. She wouldn't talk about it. Just said she fled through Nemersdorf and has been on the run.
Nemersdorf. Everyone knew the rumors. A few months ago, the Russians stormed the village and reportedly committed vicious acts of brutality. Women were nailed to barn doors. Children mutilated. News of the massacre had spread quickly and sent people into a panic. Many packed up instantly and began to move west, terrified that their village would be next to fall into the hands of Stalin's armies. And this young girl had been there. Poor thing, I whispered to Ava. And the German told me a Russian had found her in the forest.
Where's the Russian now?
Said Ava, full of concern. I think he killed him. My heart ached for the girl. What had she seen? And deep down, I knew the truth. Hitler was pushing out Polish girls like Amelia to make room for Baltic Germans, people with German heritage, like me. My father was Lithuanian, but my mother's family had German roots. That's why we were able to flee from Stalin into the barbed arms of Hitler.
You know, I think it could be worse, said Ava.
What do you mean?
My husband told me that Hitler suspected the Polish intellectuals of anti-Nazi activity. The senior professors in Lvov? They were all executed. So the girl's father, sorry, but he was probably strangled with piano wire and...
Stop, Ava!
We can't bring this girl with us. Her coat is splattered with blood. She's clearly in trouble. And she's Polish.
And I'm Lithuanian. Are you going to toss me out, too? I was sick of it. Sick of hearing the phrase, German only. Could we really turn our backs on innocent, homeless children? They were victims, not soldiers. But I knew others felt differently. I looked over at the girl in the corner, tears streaking her filthy face. She was 15 and alone. The tears reminded me of someone. The memory opened a small door in my mind, and the dark voice slipped through it. It's all your fault.
Florian. I watched as the nurse girl moved from person to person, treating each one with items she carried in a brown leather case. I had a fever and knew I had to get rid of it to continue. The wound extended too far beyond my side for me to see or reach. I didn't need to trust her. I would never see her again. She looked my way, and I nodded. Reconsidered? She asked. When everyone's asleep, I whispered. It didn't take long. The cold barn was soon full of twitching muscles and nasal whinnies. The nurse girl cooked a potato over the fire and ate it. She ate slowly, neatly, placing small bites in her mouth, patient despite her hunger. She was high-born. She then brought her bag over to me. Bullet wound? She whispered. I shook my head. I slowly pulled off the sleeve of my coat, biting back the wince. I lay on my side, my head turned away from her. She peeled my sticky shirt from the mass of congealed blood. She didn't gasp or cry like other girls did when they saw something gruesome. She didn't make a sound. Maybe nurses were used to it. I looked over my shoulder to see if she was still there. Her face was an inch from the wound. She examined it intently, and then leaned forward and whispered in my right ear. "Shrapnel, about 2 days ago. You stopped the bleeding by applying pressure, but that pushed the fragments deeper, causing more pain. It's infected. You poured liquid on it at some point." "Vodka." Her voice resumed in my ear. "There are a couple of pieces. I want to take them out. I don't have any anesthetic." "Do you have anything to drink?" I asked. "Yes, but I'll need the alcohol to clean the wound before I dress it." I felt her hand on my shoulder. "I should do this now, before the infection becomes too advanced." Small boots appeared in front of my face. The Polish girl knelt in front of me, with snow wrapped in a handkerchief. She swept my hair aside and pressed the cold compress to my forehead. "Go away," I told her.
"Wait."
The nurse looked to the Polish girl.
"Could you please go outside and find a large stick?"
The girl nodded and left. The nurse then sat down in front of me. I watched her mouth as she whispered.
"Her name is Emilia. She's from southern Poland. Her father sent her away for safety, near Nemersdorf."
"Holy hell," I breathed. She nodded and opened her bag.
"I'm Joanna. I worked as a physician's assistant for a few years. I'm not German. I'm Lithuanian. Is that a problem?"
"I don't care what you are. Have you done this before?"
"I've done similar procedures." "What's your name?" she asked.
I paused. What should I tell her? "What's the stick for?" She ignored my question and returned to hers.
"What's your name?"
The fever burned, making me weak and dizzy. My name. I was named for a 16th century painter my mother adored. No, I would not tell her. No conversations. The nurse sighed.
"You'll need the stick to bite down on. This is going to hurt."
I closed my eyes. "Florian," I wanted to say. "I'm Florian. And I'll be dead soon."
Emilia. The giant woman, Ava, told me that the nurse girl was Lithuanian. Her name was Joanna. She seemed kind, but how could I be sure? If she was going to treat the knight, I felt I should stand watch. I owed him a debt now, didn't I? He told me to go away. His voice was another in the chorus of those who wanted the Poles to disappear. Forever. After fleeing through Nemersdorf, I met an old woman from Lvov on the road. Her eyes stormed with death. She told me the Nazis had killed thousands of Polish Jews in Lvov. "The Weigels?" I asked. "Gone." My voice fell to a whisper. "The Lempels?" "Why do you keep asking? I told you they're all dead. Probably hundreds of thousands." Why was I asking? Because Rachel and Helen were my friends. When Father sent me away to East Prussia, they sneaked over the night before and brought me sweets and gifts. Dead. How could she say it with such finality? I didn't want to believe it. The pretty Lithuanian girl, Joanna, had told me to find a large stick. I walked outside the barn. Wind and snow lashed my face. Every movement felt awkward in my layers and bulky coat. Should I confide in Ioana? Maybe she could help me. But I knew what would happen. She would be disgusted. I heard a noise and looked up. That's when I saw it. Perched on top of the barn was the largest nest I had ever seen.
Alfred. Hello, dear Hannalora. How writing or just thinking your name alters my mood. Sometimes I lie on my cot and whisper it oh so slowly into the darkness. Ha-na-Laura. Little Laura. It is late evening. I imagine you at home, finger twirling in your hair while reading one of your beloved books. Perhaps the snow falls there as it does here? Home in Heidelberg feels so very far away. Buffered by distance, I feel compelled to share a secret. Perhaps it is naughty of me to mention, but did you ever realize that your kitchen window stands opposite our lavatory window on the main floor? I could often smell your mother's duck in the oven from our bathroom. Yes, I frequently watched you eating your breakfast before school. Oh, do not be embarrassed, Laura. Neighbors share close quarters. We, of course, shared more. Those memories, they are the coals that shield my heart from frost. But time for reflection is scant. Relaxation is non-existent for a brave man of the Kriegsmarine. As you know, I am quite an accomplished watchman. Attention to detail has always been one of my great strengths. Hence I am making note of everything to report to you. There is word of a massive naval evacuation, and we are preparing at the port. I will finally be at sea, traversing the waterways into the oceans, like the adventurers you so love to read about in your precious novels. And it will be an adventure, Laura. People are already arriving at the port to stand in line for one of the big ships. Some have carried all of their earthly belongings with them, piled high upon horse-drawn carts and sleds. Expensive rugs, clocks, china, chairs, they have brought it all. Certainly there won't be space enough, and some items will be denied. I saw a lovely crystal butterfly on a cart today. It brought you instantly to mind. How your dark, silken hair floats like wings of gossamer. If the butterfly is not permitted on board, I have decided I will keep it. Redistribution to those who are worthy makes the most sense. Your kind heart would break if you saw the people at the port. They are weary and filthy from their long treks. Some have escaped from countries as far away as Estonia. Can you imagine? Stalin has stolen more than land, Hannalora. He has stolen human dignity. I see it in their forlorn eyes and broken posture. It's all the fault of the communists. They are animals. And now Stalin's army is closing in and people are panicking. No, no, fear not. I am quite confident and assured of my abilities. After all, a human being cannot be trained for these situations. He must be born for them. And thanks be to God that I was. I rolled over and slid my duffel out from beneath the cot. I reached inside for my well-worn copy of Hitler's book, Mein Kampf, and spotted the writing paper Mutter had given to me. Perhaps tomorrow I would actually put pen to paper.
Ioana. I lit a match to sterilize the scalpel and began talking. The doctor in Insterberg taught me that talking to patients often calmed them. When Stalin occupied Lithuania, my family fled, I said. My mother had German heritage, so Hitler allowed us to repatriate and come to Germany. I only got as far as Insterberg.
Insterberg is East Prussia, he said. So Hitler, he's your savior?
He didn't say more,
but his sarcastic snort spoke for him. He was either critical of the Nazi Party, critical of me for repatriating, or both. I didn't need his criticism. I carried enough guilt on my own. I had done everything wrong. I had the highest marks in school, but couldn't master common sense. I know it's cold, but let's remove your coat entirely and have you lie on your stomach, I told him. As I pulled off the sleeve, his pale green identity card peeked out from his interior jacket pocket. Perfect. If he wouldn't tell me his name, I'd take a look for myself. I'm going to press the surrounding area of the wound to see how far the infection has spread. He didn't respond. Tell me when it hurts. I gently pressed around the perimeter of his wound with one hand, making note of tender areas. With my other hand, I tried to wriggle the papers from his coat pocket.
Stop!
The ferocity of his command made me jump.
Hand me my papers.
What?
You heard me. Now!
He reached back and I placed the identity card in his hand.
And the folded paper. It's also in the pocket, he said.
I pulled out the cream sheet of paper, trying to get a look at it. I couldn't see through the fold. He snatched it and slid both under his chest. Amelia returned, carrying a stick, white flakes glistening atop her pink hat. It's snowing again? I asked. She nodded. That would inhibit our progress tomorrow.
Let's get this over with, said the patient.
His tolerance for pain exceeded anything I had seen. He bit the stick, not out of necessity, but in defiance. Amelia was an attentive assistant, anticipating both my needs and his. But she appeared fatigued, so I sent her back to her corner to rest. She didn't sleep. She watched my every move. The final piece of shrapnel was lodged deep. My knuckles disappeared as I reached inside the wound for it. I was concerned about gangrene, but didn't mention it. The pain was enough for him to contend with. I leaned down and whispered, "I think I got it all. It was deep and the wound is wide. I'm going to wake the shoemaker and have him sew it up. He's probably got a tighter stitch." He spit out the stick.
"No, you do it."
He paused.
"Please."
I looked at the open wound. Poet sewed a lot of leather and would seam it cleaner than I could. But if blood and flesh bothered the old man, it would only make things worse. I sewed and dressed the wound. "So I didn't see your papers, but I did spy cigarettes in your pocket," I told him, wiping my hands.
"You didn't tell me there was a fee."
He looked up at me, eyes flickering like gas lamps. His face spoke of pain. Physical pain, like I had seen in the hospital. But also emotional pain, like I had seen in my parents. He stared at me, his eyes slowly traveling over my face.
"There are matches in the same pocket," he finally said.
I pulled out a cigarette and ran it through my fingers, trying to straighten it. I lit the end and sucked a grateful drag. The hot smoke warmed my cold chest. I leaned toward him and gently put the cigarette to his lips, allowing him to inhale. The glow of the tip illuminated his face. There were hints of handsome beneath the bruises and dirt. "How old are you?" I asked.
"Save the rest. They're hard to come by," he said, exhaling.
I stubbed the cigarette out against my shoe and returned it to his pocket. "Do you want to see the shrapnel I removed? This big piece is nearly the size of a bottle cap,"